Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is David Burns, the Chief Technology Officer at Yell. Always interested about to learn about companies such as yours, and you know how I suppose from the entrepreneurial perspective and how you actually came up and decided to press go. You know, kind of what a bit about that journey and how that seemed to work out for you.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me think about it. So I started off my career, I guess, in finance, working in, stockbrokers, then hedge funds, consulting, did that for a number of years, and then eventually was working in this hedge fund and sort of had enough of it, and I thought I want to do something else. So I got into property development purely out of coincidence, because I had a conversation with someone who I got on very well with, and he'd started a company that became one of Europe's largest property development companies. And he said, "Why don't you come and join me?" So I did. And it took a couple of years, but I gradually worked out that in property development and real estate as a whole, there weren't any data systems comparable to what I had been used to working with in finance. And I thought, well, that's a bit odd. So I had a look around. I tried to find one, couldn't find anything for us to use, because I thought, well, this will make my life easier. If I've got a data system that I can use to figure out where we should be building stuff, that would be great. But it just turned out there wasn't one. So I started building something for us to use internally, and gradually, you know, figured out that, hold on a minute, I'm probably not the only person that's got this problem. There might be something to this. I was sort of tinkering away with it evenings and weekends, a little bit manically, actually. You know, there was plenty of kind of midnights working on some bit of code or some weird little problem, just for the pure interest of it. Thought, okay, well, this is interesting. We can use it. Yeah, heavy nerd stuff. Enjoyed it. And then I thought, well, let's try and start something. Let's see if I can actually make this into something. And I suppose someone that really, helped me to turn it from just sort of a concept into actually some kind of a functioning business entity and sort of kickstart the whole thing with the first funding round was one of our advisors, a chap called Edward Farmer, who runs a really good financial advisory business. And I thought, well, okay, let's raise a bit of money. So raise a bit of money from my former boss, from this chap Edward, a few other people, and on top of that, got onto a tech accelerator program run by a company called Pi Labs. They specialize in property technology. So it all sort of lined up. There was raising this bit of money, getting onto this accelerator, quitting my job, or regular day job, let's say. And that kick-started it all in, what was it, 23rd of April last year. It was I think, my last day of a regular job.
So, you raise a fund and, all of a sudden you're kind of thrown into this. Like, the risk associated with, obviously, building a startup is, it typically needs to be, I suppose, considered. But from your perspective, was it much about, the confidence, the passion, or was it something that it just kind of happened, as opposed to
you know, a super calculated thing. You know, which typically I get responses of people saying kind of a mixture of the two, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say it is a mixture of the two, because I was definitely pressing for it to happen, and a lot of hard work went into making it happen. But did I kind of set out from the beginning of, right, I'm going to create a startup and it's going to do this and this is how it's going to work? No, not at all. I started with, I've got a problem. I'm trying to solve the problem. How do I make this solution available to other people? Which, yeah, so it's somewhere halfway between the two, falling into it and putting a lot of work.
Something we like to continuously really talk about on the show is, you know, that the importance of kind of external feedback. And I always think that, you know, building a startup is just the greatest example of getting that, you know, external feedback to ensure, like, even if it's just for a clarity check, whether it's, you know, from a peer or a mentor or whatever, it's something that you really have to be proactive at doing, is ensuring that, you know, you get, you know, perspective from outside of your own bubble, I suppose. So was that something that, you know, you always were conscious about getting, you know, advice from, and even looking at, you know, not competitive companies, but comparable companies as well, and seeing how they've done things? Is this something that I suppose, you know, you're really conscious about doing?
All the time. Because there's nothing that kind of teaches you better than the market and the reality of what do people actually want? What do they actually need? And you can very easily, and I've been guilty of it as well, you know, get wrapped up in your own thoughts about, oh, I'm going to do this way. And you go into a sort of isolation bubble, and then discover that what kind of come up with all the direction you're going is actually separated from the reality of what people need and what they want. So it's always essential, I think, to not only be testing your concepts with the market, but looking at the market itself and seeing where it's going, see what are potential comparables, competitors, innovative new ideas, creating, you know, as much as possible, an endless feedback loop that allows continuous evolution and design of the product.
Yeah, I think it's almost one of the most important things, I think. And I think you get so caught up in yourself, and I'm sure that, you know, did you have a co-founder for the venture? Or?
So not to start with. To start with, it was just myself, and then when was it? It was New Year's. This is a funny story. So I do have a co-founder now. We met on a beach in Brazil, and it was sort of New Year's. It was on the run up to New Year's Eve last year, and sort of a few days afterwards as well. And he and I were basically the only two non-Brazilians on this stretch of beach in the middle of nowhere. So obviously we're hanging out, and he specialized very much in, you know, sales and marketing. I'm much more on the kind of strategy and tech side. And it just seemed a kind of natural synergy. So we then started, you know, working together a little bit. He was helping out in the kind of evenings and weekends when he could. And then fully came on board at the start of this year.
You met on a beach in Brazil, and then I thought you were going to tell me about some kind of romance then, but by the way.
Oh, it's been very romantic.
I can imagine. It must be. And, you know, having...
My wife sometimes gets jealous.
Well, I'm sure you definitely spend more time with him than her these days. But,
yeah,
you know, it's interesting actually, because, actually when I was with my first startup in LA, we actually got invited to and got through to the final sort of, I suppose, decision process at Y Combinator.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go to Y Combinator, and, you know, one of the kind of huge things that they had on their kind of, I suppose, yes-no list was that they were only ever really encouraged by people who had co-founders. Like, they didn't like solo founders for some reason, and I always like struggle with that concept, but I think that it is good to have kind of a sparring partner, isn't it, to, you know, keep you in line, someone who you can bounce ideas off. I mean, if you left down to, you know, if it was me, if I was left down to my own devices, Jesus, God knows what would happen. But You know, I think that it's, I'm not saying that they're absolutely right, but it's always an interesting point that I thought about when, you know, I think about startups and who they're.
Well, there is a reason why they do it. So I dug into this myself because for, you know, a good year or so, it was just me. So single founder startups are the higher risk, higher return. If you look at the profile and the history of what's happened with single founder startups, they have a higher probability of blowing up or the founder going completely insane because they've got too much to do. But they also, when they go right, they make the mega bucks. So, you know, Mark Zuckerberg would be a prime example there. Although obviously there are other people involved and there's a great film about that, but realistically it was him. But then there's plenty of others. So I think the reasoning behind why so many accelerator programs and VCs look for multiple founders is that it de-risks the situation, even though it also potentially lowers the return levels. But I'm sure they've got that worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose at the end of the day, they're investing in something, so it's less about the... They just want their ROI, I suppose. They don't care whether there's one, two, etc. founders to it, I suppose. But it's interesting, and I think the kind of, you know, psychology behind how that kind of works is always a fascinating thing. And, you know, I suppose it does make sense in a lot of ways. And I'm sure since you've, found your co-founder, it's been... probably, you know, a lot different, and you've maybe even thought about things in a different way. I'm sure that it has added quite a lot to the dynamics of, you know, how you work it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's somebody there with different and complementary skill sets. You know, we can then rely on each other to do the things that we are individually good at, which, you know, is a big plus. I am absolutely awful at design, an example. Whereas, Corey, my co-founder, and a few other people on the team, much, much better. So now I'm as hands-off as possible when it comes to design things.
Yeah, I mean, naturally, right? I'd be kind of the same boat as you. I'd be, crying out for people who could design anything at all. I can do, I'm very minimal. Maybe Canva, I can give it a go on Canva. Five minutes, and then that's about the extent of my design capabilities, unfortunately. Obviously now, you're building a startup, obviously there's a lot of tech involved. You know, was it, have you always kind of been motivated by tech, or has it really been about, I suppose, outcomes for you that, have been a motivating factor? I know you're not necessarily from a tech background, but has tech always been something that, you know, has compelled you?
What I'm looking for is a vision of the future of how I see the property and the real estate industry should be or could be, where things are much more efficient, they're much faster, they're much cleaner, and much easier to understand. And, you know, it's a kind of legacy industry that is hamstrung by all kinds of complications and obscurities. And what I want to do is get rid of those. And the way that I see to do it is through technology. And in particular data, because that's what we provide, real estate data. So it's that kind of vision of the future is the first part that then gets a reality check by putting it to our clients and prospective clients and saying, you know, is this actually something that's useful or is this just a total pipe dream? And then it comes back into, right, well, now how do we build the tech for it? And then that is quite exciting as well. On our new system now, we've discovered this interesting new problem, which is that the database has increased by a factor of 50. So it's now 50 times larger than it was in the previous version, and it'll probably be about 100 times larger by the end of the year. And that creates an interesting technical problem to solve is, well, how do you now deal with a database that is so utterly enormous, which is an interesting soul.
Yeah. So how is that your your background specifically, or are you doing, is it a lot of collaboration, you know, on the technical side, or is it, you know, I suppose how hands on are you now with, you know, working with the databases and such?
So we've got in-house tech guys and we've got some outsourced tech guys as well. Everything gets led from here in the office by a chap called Ralph. In terms of the actual day-to-day, you know, the coding and making things happen, that's pretty much all on those guys. I'll just advise on what the outcomes should look like and what the processes should be. So as an example, just this morning, it's a very, very simplistic example. Danielle, our senior back-end engineer, was asking me about how do we calculate the average discount on a particular property. So where you've got a property that's been put on the market, let's say for £300,000, we calculate what the realistic price of it should be. So let's say it's, you know, £280,000. So, you know, it's a bit of a discount there. And how do we actually calculate that? So he comes to me and says, okay, well, how do we do this? And I explain it. Then he goes away and does a much, much better job of coding than I certainly ever have. Although I'm learning things from them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose you do, being surrounded by techies all day. You'll pick up a few things, I would assume. You know, when you, you know, look at, you know, relatively early stage in your business now, I think, what are the focuses for you that you have to be most conscious of at this point? Is it, you know, is it just as basic as, you know, new business, or is it the product itself, making sure that, you know, that is the quality? Where do you, I suppose, focus most of your attention, you know, with I suppose, again, relatively lesser resources than, you know, a corporation would have?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a mixture of both. It's driving new business, but new business is ultimately dependent upon the technology. So we have to make sure that the technology works and does exactly what people want, and at the same time try and push as many kind of new customers towards using this platform away from the old methods that they were using, if they were using any methods at all.
Yeah, I mean, it is a massive balancing act, I suppose. You know, I've had, you see both, and it's somewhere in between, and I suppose it's probably quite tempting to just go 100% on trying to pull in new business, right? I'm sure that's, I think it's the more tempting thing to do. But, you know, typically I think if you pull it in too quickly and the product's not ready, you know, then that's when you, I suppose do see some of the issues. But it, nonetheless, I mean, it's a tempting proposition. It's just to pull in, you know, to absolutely run it at new business. So it's a interesting balancing act and something that requires patience in a hectic environment, by the sound.
Yes, that is very true. And it's one of the things where you're creating a new product for a market that's never had this type of technology. So you don't really have anything that you can necessarily look at and compare it to and say, okay, well, it should be like this, and here's an example of something else. So everything that we're doing, we're effectively doing for the first time. And then that then has to go out to customers and say, you know, is this working? Is this what you guys want? Whilst at the same time, like you say, trying to drive new business and get more people involved and more people involved. So yeah, total balancing act.
When you look back at, you know, when you were kind of starting out in your career, you know, starting off in hedge funds and, you know, investment banking and then eventually moving over to real estate, when you look back, was there ever like a point where you thought that you might end up, you know, founding a company, or was it, you know, was it something that you'd ever considered? Was it something that had interested you, or was it just something that, I suppose, just happened? Did you always have that entrepreneurial mindset, do you think, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it was always there, definitely. When I was working in hedge funds, I figured that at some point I would start my own one. I figured it probably wouldn't be for at least another 5 or 10 years from now. And when I was working in real estate, actually I didn't really think about it so much then. I suppose I was tinkering with this for at least half of that period, so that ultimately led somewhere. But I think that desire to do something that is wholly your own has always been present.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I think that you have to be motivated by achievement, I would say, because it's very easy, isn't it? Especially in somewhere like London where everything's so damn expensive, you know, to have a comfortable job, make a good living, you know, not have a tremendous amount of stress relative to building a startup. So you have to be somewhat massively motivated by, you know, by outcomes and relatively competitive, I would think, to want to take something on like this. Because I'm sure you could have just stayed in what you were doing and been absolutely comfortable.
Yeah, it's very true. Could have done. Decided to go the more uncomfortable, less well-paid route for some reason. I'm not sure if it's probably a form of madness, really, isn't it?
when you say it like that, it probably is to a certain extent.
You're gonna work twice as hard for half as much in a situation where the odds are effectively stacked against you. Because I think, what was it, like nine out of ten companies fail in the first year, and then of those that survive, 9 out of 10 fail in the second year. And I think startups that receive funding, it's a lower attrition or loss rate, primarily because they then get some funding and expertise involved. But even so, you're very much locking yourself into something that is very, very different to the kind of typical career path that many people go through.
But yeah, it's got to be something, you know, it's got to be something that you would want for yourself, you know, want to prove to yourself. Like, you see, it is that competitiveness, that competitive drive and kind of, you know, the willpower to try and push through and, you know, and get there. You know, I think that's what's compelling about people who build startups is, for me, it's not necessarily the product always or what they're actually trying to build. It's just, you know, the journey and the willingness to build something. And I think that's the beauty of it. It's something that you feel, you know, particularly passionately about. You know, and just forcing that through and doing it for, you know, the absolute love of actually achieving something. And I think that, you know, the people who do have success, they see an opportunity and they absolutely believe in it. And they're the ones who ultimately, you know, do well. I think if you go into a startup thinking that, you know, I'm going to make a ton of money, the chances are that it's probably not going to happen for you.
Yeah, I just look at it as how can we do things better? And that has always been, you know, present throughout previous jobs, et cetera, is how do we make this better? How do we improve this process? How do we make it faster, more effective, cleaner, whatever it might be? And so this is really just a great opportunity to be able to do that and to be able to serve a market that frankly really needs it.
I agree. And, you know, moving forward, looking forward now, you know, is it difficult to get too far ahead of yourself? And how do you kind of manage, you know, your kind of excitement and enthusiasm and the motivators that come along with that? Is it these like small incremental wins, you know, adding another person to the team, you know, building a little bit, a stronger product, you know, getting another deal done on the business development side? Like, do you have to keep it to kind of, you know, small, like step by step achievements or is it important to have that overarching vision that you feel that you're constantly striving towards?
Well, this comes back to those complementary skill sets between myself and Corey. So I'm very much the guy that's looking at the top of the mountain and going like, this is how it should be or will be. And, you know, got visions of people in offices wearing Oculus Rifts and looking at 3D buildings in front of them and, you know, touching on them and understanding what's the yield and the investment opportunity, all that stuff. And that's obviously not going to happen this year, next year, but at some point we will. Corey, on the other hand, is always very focused on what's the kind of here and now and near term. So I think between the two of us, then we have this overview of where's the kind of long-term vision, or i.e. where is the top of the mountain, okay, and how do we get there step by step? And those little wins are, yeah, they're definitely crucial. They show you that you're going somewhere. You know, you are taking steps in the right direction.
I agree. It's interesting. And it's, and I'm sure, you know, the kind of collaboration, the people around you are also a big part of that as well. You know, I think one of the massive things about, building your own thing is you get to hire people who you want.
Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. We've had some interesting chats with different people about company culture. How do you create one? What does it look like? How does it actually evolve? And it seems like it does come very much from, you know, the founding team. And we've got a really good team here now in the office. I think so. And everyone seems to be getting on really well. And we want to make sure that we keep that as we grow. And that's a question that I've chatted with other sort of startup founders, people that are later, further on than we are, about how do they do it and how do they manage it, which is interesting.
I think so. Well, all I can do, I suppose, is, you know, wish you the best luck and continued success. It's really exciting. I like the concept of the product, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you, and interesting to hear, you know, how things are going and, you know, your thoughts in general. So thanks very much for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.